Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't want to get anybody mad here, but it's amazing how when you pass away, everybody kind of forgets stuff, and you know, the conflation between Iraq and Afghanistan seems to get kind of like lost in a shuffle, yeah, and which was a big thing, and yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Hundreds of thousands of people dead as a result of that. And you'd think, you know, somebody would say, oh, by the way, he also, but nobody said it. Let's talk with Becky Mowbray now, shall we, about what's coming up on the ballot and leave her out of her mess. Becky Mowbray, president and CEO of BGR. Talk about what's on the ballot in New Orleans, bond propositions and so forth. Good morning, Becky. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm great. Thanks for having me on this morning.
Let's talk about charter amendments, then we'll recap some of the other things.
Okay. Very good. Very good. So on the November 15th ballot, there is a proposal to change the city charter in New Orleans to underscore the idea that the city attorney is supposed to represent all branches of government in the city, and they can't, favor the executive branch over the city council or some other entity in there. And this is on the ballot because of concerns that, you know, as everyone knows, the last few years have been marked by a lot of fighting between the city council and the mayor. And, and a lot of that came through with issues where it was felt that the city attorney was maybe not being as independent and neutral as she should have been.
How do you legislate that? I'm just curious because, you know, I know you said underscore, and that's not the word that's in the affirm, underscore, however you want to use it. But when you get right down to it, if for whatever reason, and I'm not implying that this is going to happen, but if the same thing should occur, mm-hmm. you would think that the charter pretty well says that now, right? So what difference is this going to make? And I'm not arguing against it, Becky. I'm just wondering when it comes to enforcement, how you enforce something like this.
Right. Well, that was one of our concerns. And so, as you noted, it already says in the city charter that the city attorney represents the entire city of New Orleans, capital C being the entity, the collective entity of the city of New Orleans. And that is reinforced by something called the rules of professional conduct, which are kind of the ethical rules for lawyers in the state of Louisiana. And, lawyers are required to follow these things. You can't, if you've got clients that sort of have a dispute, you know, lawyers can't represent both sides. They need to step away from one or get different counsel for it. So, these things already exist. So we felt like this proposed charter change was well-meaning. We totally understood where they were coming from. But we had a couple of concerns with it. One is that We just really felt like it was unnecessary because you look at the language of the proposed amendment and then you go to the charter and you look at what it already says there. It states quite plainly that the city attorney shall represent the entire city of New Orleans. And then again, that's backed by the ethical rules for lawyers. And, you know, someone who violated that could find themselves the subject of a complaint or something like that. We also felt that it was perhaps unnecessary because you may recall, Tommy, a few years ago, the voters passed an amendment to the city charter that said that the city charter, that the city council now must confirm mayoral appointees to, you know, the heads of departments that are listed in the city charter. And that includes the city attorney as one of those positions. So we haven't, we've only used that process so far in confirming the police chief and a new DPW director, Department of Public Works. It hasn't been used yet in the city attorney's, you know, for appointing a new city attorney. And it was our feeling that that is a really important opportunity for the council to be able to make their expectations known. And, you know, Council President J.P. Morrell has said his very first question at such a hearing would be, who do you work for? And, you know, and so they will have ample opportunity to set the tone and really drill down and make it clear that anyone who's a candidate for being city attorney really understands that they have obligations to, you know, both branches of government.
This, it wouldn't give anybody any additional redress or anything if for whatever reason the city attorney, the same thing should happen again, does it?
There is one other aspect of this proposed charter change, and it's kind of in the and one of this is something that concerned us. It says it does add something new, and it says that if the mayor were to fire the city attorney, the council has the opportunity to overturn that termination. And the idea of that was to, you know, just like on the front end, you would need to, you know, get the council's confirmation of the person appointed to the city attorney. It would also involve the council, you know, if things didn't work out and the termination of the city attorney. And the idea of that was that, say, you know, the city attorney needs to make a lot of independent judgments where the you know, there's a gray area of the law and what the city attorney is recommending as the best course of action for the city may not always be popular with the mayor. And so I think the thought behind this portion of the proposed charter change was that, you know, if the mayor fired the city attorney because the mayor didn't like the advice that they were getting, the council could be like, oh, no, 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 like, and, you know, and overturn that termination. But our concern was that there could be a lot, you know, there could be good reasons why a mayor might want to terminate somebody. I mean, what if there are sexual harassment issues? What if somebody's not showing up to work or, you know, just there are problems there? And if the council were to overturn the termination of the city attorney, think about it. The city attorney would be going back to their old job where the mayor has expressed that they have no confidence in this person. And it hardly seems like you'd have a, you know, constructive working relationship. We just felt that it was better that could just introduce all sorts of problems, and they'd really probably be better off you know, inviting, the council would probably be better off inviting the mayor to confer with them in an executive session and sort of, you know, explain. And that if things were remained more in a consultative posture, it would be better. And there's also this term in that section of the proposed charter change about, you know, terminating the city attorney for valid cause. Well, what's valid cause? Mm-hmm. Like that, you could end up with more disputes about what that is. And certainly the council could pass an ordinance that would define that and help, you know, give the parties some guidance about what that means and when it's appropriate to fire the city attorney. But they haven't done that so far. So we thought that led to the potential for bad outcomes, and coupled with the fact that, you know, it already says everything that they want to say, it already says it in the charter, and the fact that there's this card to play with the confirmation process that hasn't been tested yet, it just seemed to us like this was all really unnecessary and perhaps not very constructive. And so BGR takes an against position on this proposed change.
Did BGR look at the other amendment to the Home Rule Charter?
We did not. We are a tiny staff with one research director and three researchers, and the ballot work that we did on the bond proposal that we did for this, with, where there are actually three questions, and, you know, we also did a look back at the 2019 bond issue for background. We just simply had our hands full. So we only looked at the city attorney one.
The reason I bring it up is it says, shall Section 5-404 of the Home Rule Charter of the City of New Orleans be amended to extend the deadlines for the City Planning Commission and City Council to act on the master plan and amendments thereto, as described in Ordinance Calendar Number 35-155-30397-M.C.S. Now, for the average person going in to vote, they don't know what that means. I don't know. It could be simple house cleaning, right? It could be something that, well, this got lost in the details, so this needs to be done, and let's clean this up right here with this, because legally we have to. Or it could be something else at play, and I know that you all have limited resources, Becky, and I'm certainly not calling you out for not looking at this. I'm just wondering, what advice would you give people on deciding whether to vote for this or not?
I would, you know, maybe reach out to your council official or someone on the City Planning Commission, or, you know, Tommy, if WWL had time, I think inviting either someone from the council or the City Planning Commission on to explain what it's all about, I think would be very helpful.
We'll do that, Becky. We'll invite somebody on and find out what the hell's going on, because, again, it could be something benign, right? It could be something where, look, this for whatever reason was left out of the original and we need to clean it up to make this more efficient, or maybe something else is going on. Who knows?
Yeah, or maybe they need a little bit more flexibility in doing reviews or something like that to, you know, make things function better with the master plan. But I would love to listen to such an interview because we did not have the chance to check it out ourselves.
Well, we'll do it. Well, Jordan Fee will get that done for you, I guarantee you. 9:22, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about bond issues, all right?
Thank you.
Recap that, you bet. We're talking to Becky Mowbray, President and CEO of BGR. You know, we're of the opinion here, if you're going to vote, you may as well know what the hell it is you're voting on and what your vote means, so it can't hurt, right? We'll continue to talk about it when we come back. Tommy Tucker, WWL. 9:27, talking to Becky, Tommy Tucker, talking to Becky Mowbray, President and CEO of BGR, Bureau of Governmental Research. We've already talked about the city charter amendment that they've looked at. And Becky, to be clear, the city charter is like the city constitution, correct?
Yes, that's right.
To be changed,
right.
Voters have to approve any changes. So we've already talked about that. Last time you were on, you talked about the three bond propositions that are on the November 15th ballot. People have already begun voting. I just wanted to recap those with you, and we'll take them 1 through 3, perhaps, would be the best way to do it.
Sure, absolutely. So, yes, there are three bond proposals on the ballot for voters in Orleans Parish on November 15th. They would, if approved by voters, they would authorize the city to sell collectively $510 million in bonds that would pay for upgrades in city infrastructure and equipment, drainage and stormwater management, and affordable housing.
Let me jump in real quick just to be clear, because people hear things and they get confused. This has nothing to do with payday loan. This has nothing to do with bonds. This has nothing to do with anything that's been discussed before.
That is correct, okay. Tommy. The headlines coming out of the city about its finances are terrible. This is a separate thing. Okay. This is about creating resources that will allow the new mayor and incoming council to keep the project going that will improve, you know, things in the physical, in the built environment and in facilities around our region at a time when citizens, you know, are very frustrated with the lack of repairs.
So what did you guys find on these bond proposals?
Okay. So we looked at each one individually using our standard framework that asks the same questions about planning, financial management, accountability, and effective outcomes for citizens. We were against the affordable housing proposition and for the infrastructure position and for the drainage proposition. And that's the order that they appear on the ballot. So the affordable housing proposition would allocate $45 million to affordable housing. We recognize that housing is a vital issue in the city. It's something that holds us back. But, you know, and we would love to support something related to housing. But we did not feel like this one was up to snuff. They propose using the money to pay for the housing charter or the housing trust fund that voters put into the city charter last year. That requires that the city each year put in the equivalent of 2% of the city budget and spend it on housing related issues. We think there's, you know, a good framework for plans and things like that. But what we didn't like is that when voters made that change last year and the city council proposed it and voters approved it, it became a required recurring expense. And what was said at the time is that the city would pay for that. Well, now they're proposing financing that and using, you know, one-time money from the bonds to pay for this thing that is a recurring expenditure. That is a bad practice. It's also a short-term solution. If this bond issue is for $45 million and its next year's contribution would be required to be about $14.5 million, that means you get a maximum of 3 years.
Would this be tantamount, Becky, if I might jump in, would this be tantamount to taking out a mortgage for rental property?
You're borrowing money
that you have to pay back over a long period of time for one-time expenses, right?
Well, it's a recurring expense. I mean, every year the city's going to have to pay this.
With no equity, no capital investment is what I'm saying.
It's not sustainable that a general principle in budgeting is that you should pay for recurring expenses with recurring revenues and that you should, you know, only take on recurring expenses that you can afford on a regular basis, that you've got enough money coming in. And, you know, so here the city is saying, well, no, we're going to use the bond money. And, well, that means it's a really expensive way to pay for a long-term recurring expense that, you know, if they make a $14.5 million contribution as the required contribution for next year, well, by the time you pay that back, you know, over the life of the bonds, that's going to end up costing the taxpayers $24.1 million. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe that's one thing if you're doing streets or infrastructure or things like that. But this is something they're going to need to be paying for every year. And then it's also an incomplete solution. Like that $14.5 million that's required to be paid is, it includes like some overhead costs and things like that, that you can't use bond money for. So it just, felt like a square peg in a round hole and was not the right way to go. So while we support the city doing something about housing, we don't think bonds are the right way to pay for this.
Let's move on to infrastructure. Let's go to infrastructure and water retention.
Yes. So those are the next two on the ballot. Infrastructure is $415 million. And the drainage and stormwater management is another $50 million. We were in favor of both of these. These are core needs for our city that, as everybody knows, the roads are in horrible shape. And, you know, and people regularly have homes, businesses, and cars that flood when it rains. And this is a way to start making a difference in that, to give city leaders some resources to keep moving forward on things. We felt like there was really good accountability on this. They've got a published list of projects that would be that they would fund, and if they want to change that, if they want to make any changes to the list, it has to go back before the city council so the public would have a chance to weigh in. And so we felt like there was really good accountability. We are encouraging the city, if voters approve these, to create public-facing dashboards that would also swing in the status of the projects and the amount of money that they cost, so that residents can really see where their money is going and understand the progress. Our one caveat on these is that I want to take the opportunity to say the city has historically done a terrible job of maintaining infrastructure and maintaining buildings. And they have got to start changing the way they handle that, because if voters are approving these bonds, we're going to be paying them back for 30 years. And you should be able to expect as a citizen that you're getting long-term improvements in our built environment. And if the city doesn't maintain streets and doesn't clean out, you know, clogged catch basins and things like that, or repair broken pipes, things like that, then we as citizens are not getting the full value of the investment that, you know, if you don't seal cracks on a road, the potholes are going to come in and maybe you only get 12 or 15 years out of it instead of 30. So we're calling upon the city to make some improvements.
And very quickly about the stormwater retention.
Same thing. We were in favor of it for all the same reasons as the infrastructure one.
Thank you, Becky. Appreciate your time as always. Becky Mulberry, President and CEO of BGR. We'll talk to Troy Carter, U.S. Congressman, when we come back. 9:36, 24 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. 9:42, 18 till 10. Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by U.S. Congressman Troy Carter, Democrat from the state of Louisiana. How you doing, Congressman?
Hey, Tommy, how are you today, my friend?
I'm all right. Look, let me just ask you. I'm be straight up with you. President Trump on 60 Minutes said it was up to you guys to open the government. Why don't you open it?
I wish it were that easy.
I know.
I wish it were that easy.
I know. Tell me.
I'll tell you, if it were that simple, it'd be open. And
tell
I will
me,
tell you this. And
tell
this,
me what the sticking actual, points are, please.
Listen, we were there prior to the shutdown. This is not a surprise. We knew a shutdown was looming if we didn't act. We offered ourselves to be at the table to negotiate and talk about things that needed to be accomplished. Like, for example, we knew that the ending of the ACA tax credits were looming. We wanted to have a discussion about that. We knew that the National Flood Insurance Program would expire. I had a bill to address that. It was never called to the floor to vote prior to the shutdown. There's a lot of moving parts involved. It's not as shut and dry as some would suggest. Listen, Congress is and has always been a deliberative body, a body that requires discussion, conversation, negotiation, compromise. We don't always have to agree, but we cannot simply say we're not going to talk. And, you know, that's where we are now. This notion, open the government, then we'll talk. Why can't we talk at the same time? Listen, we have now entered 35th day of a government shutdown, equal to the last time President Trump was in office and there was a shutdown. It was also 35 days. It cost the taxpayers $11 billion. No one wins on this scenario, Republican, Democrat, or other. Now we find ourselves in a situation where we are facing yet another insult to injury in that people are not getting their SNAP benefits, and that should have never been subject to what happens with a government shutdown, to be frank with you. Last time there was a government shutdown, there was no disruption to SNAP benefits, none whatsoever. And it's 60 years inception. Since 60 years of the SNAP benefit program, there has never been a disruption. Think of all the natural disasters and all of the issues that has plagued our country, including shutdowns. There's never been a disruption of SNAP benefits. I say that to say that it appears to be
Mint is still $15 a month for premium wireless. And if you haven't made the switch yet, here are 15 reasons why you should. One, it's $15 a month. Two, seriously, it's $15 a month. Three, no big contracts. Four, I use it. Five, my mom uses it. Are you playing me off? That's what's happening, right? Okay, give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan. $15 per month equivalent required. New customer offer first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
A strategy less than a necessity to exact pain from the American people.
Let me tell you something, Representative.
I always say that is just unnecessary.
Let me jump in for a second. I'm just a guy. I'm a dumb guy from the West Bank, all right? I'm not a Troy Carter or a Noel Norman or a Clancy Dubose, any of these people. But to me, it just seems like now we have gone into inflicting pain where we're going to try to inflict as much pain as we can so that people get hurt. The logic of half SNAP benefits makes no sense to me. Either you're going to fund it or you're not. But to say, the logic of, okay, you need SNAP benefits, but I'm only going to give you half of what you need. Either you need them or you don't, as far as the logic goes. So I don't understand where you come with half SNAP benefits. Do you get that, or am I missing something?
Tommy, you're far too modest on your intellect, my friend. You are spot on. You are 100% accurate. There is no reason that there should be any disruption, let alone dangling only half of the benefits to the American people. This is nothing more than brinkmanship. This is nothing more than exacting pain. I couldn't have said it any better than you. And it's unfortunate because, you know, this is take off our partisan hats. Call it Republican, call it Democrat, call it whatever you want. We're Americans first. And you know as well as I, and you don't have to be a political scientist to realize that The federal government is vast in its resources. And I already illustrated that the last time there was a government shutdown, there was no disruption of SNAP. Mm-hmm. But this time there's a disruption of SNAP because there's a strategy at play. And unfortunately, the American people are being used to facilitate a position which is just not the way to do government.
What do you think that strategy is, Congressman? What do you think the end game is here?
I think the strategy is to squeeze the negotiation or the lack thereof into having the president's way, and that is do what I say or else. The president has made it very clear he's not going to talk to Democrats until he gets his way. And we're saying, no, that's not how negotiation works. That may be how you build your Taj Mahals and all the other things, but that's not how government works. Government is not a business. Government should have principles of running fluidly and efficiently, like some businesses are. But government is not for profit. It's for service. It's to take care of and to provide resources to build a robust economy so businesses can thrive and to adjust itself to modify for the needs of our domestic and foreign affairs. This notion that we're going to just bring things to a screeching halt and starve people. Might I add, the people that are hurting, they're not just Democrats, although he seems to think in his comments, not my words, his, that most people on SNAP are Democrats. That's not accurate. But even if it were, it would be cruel and unusual. I know you know that people throughout Louisiana, throughout the entire country, red or green, red or blue, blue or black, yellow or orange, white or whatever, Republican or Democrat, use SNAP.
I know 40% of them are kids. I know 40% of them are kids, and I don't know if it's a math problem or not, but it would seem like it wouldn't be a far extrapolation to say that 40% of the kids, 40% of them, of the people that get food SNAP are kids, and that they're going to get half of what they need to eat. Is that too far or not?
No, I think that's very fair calculation.
So let me run out of time.
Deeper than that, when you talk about people that are disabled, you talk about the elderly, when you talk about people already making a determination, can I afford my full prescription? Do I pay my utility bill? Do I pay my rent? Do I eat?
Congressman, let me come at it from the other side. Let's say this. Let's say the president and the Republicans say, tell you what, we'll fully restore SNAP tomorrow. You guys pass this continuing resolution, and then we'll start talking about the Affordable Care Act tax credits, which I found out yesterday overwhelmingly go to people in red states, not blue states. And I don't think that that's something that the Republicans are going to win on. Given the political nature of that, would that be something that would interest you, or are you going to the wall? Go ahead.
No, we've got to go to the wall, and I'll tell you why. Because this cat and mouse game of holding the American people hostage while you get what you want and withhold what the American people need, you've just said it. And listen, I enjoy your show. I listen to you regularly, and your commentary is very smart and very pointed and fair. And that's what I love about you. You call balls and strikes, Republican or Democrat. I love that about your show. But here's the reality. The facts are, if you don't extend the tax credits, if you hold them out as some type of bargaining tool, the American people will hurt. It begs the question, just like you asked a second ago, why not extend it? Why not extend it now, other than trying to make a point and to make the people hurt? Our position is very clear. This should have been done before. So now we don't know that we can trust you to do what you said you're going to do. And once we give in, the American people may suffer further.
How do you see this ending? We're almost out of time, Representative. How do you see this ending?
Because I'm optimistic, I see it ending with us extending the ACA tax credits. I see us finally extending SNAP. Unfortunately, there are going to be a lot of hungry, hurting people that will be in the mix before that happens. The end game will be the game that we're asking for now. Ultimately, the things that we're asking for will happen. Unfortunately, the cat and mouse game of making the American people hurt further will come first.
I got to ask this. Do you see how the Republicans win on this affordable tax credit thing? Because Affordable Care Act tax credit thing? Because, again, there are a lot of Republicans that are benefiting from this.
Tommy, there's no way to win this because I did a town hall last week and I had Republicans and Democrats participate. And one by one, as people called in, they are disgusted that the ACA tax credits are even in this discussion. They should not be. They have nothing to do with the government shutdown. We don't have to. When the government is shut down, Congress can still be in session. Yet we haven't been in session for more than 6 weeks. We could be voting every day on these issues, notwithstanding the government shutdown. The CR is not the only thing we vote on. We can vote to extend the National Flood Insurance Program, which, by the way, is now expired. Mm-hmm. We can vote to extend the ACA tax credits, which will be expiring. Do you realize that without the National Flood Insurance Program, you can't buy a new home? You know what that does to our economy? You can't refinance your home if you need flood insurance. You know what that does to our economy? You can't develop a major project that requires flood insurance. That's going to cripple our economy. We should do better.
Thank you, Representative.
I had a bill to fix that.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time. 9:53. We like to hear from all sides. 7 till 10. We'll take a break. Come back. WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.